tonight between 6 and 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, live from Studio B, it's the Jonathan Wright Show. Find it right here at revolution.radio.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. The best program on the radio for kids. Dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the Secret Kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time, right here on Revolution Radio.
We're in a narco-syndicalist commune. We take it in turns to act as a sort of executive officer for the week.
Yes.
But all the decisions of that officer have to be ratified at a special bi-weekly meeting.
Yes, I see.
By a simple majority in the case of purely internal affairs.
Be quiet.
But by a two-thirds majority in the case of more...
Be quiet. I order you to be quiet.
Look, you stupid bastard. You've got no arms left.
Yes, I have.
Look.
It's just a flesh wound.
I don't believe I've seen such a display of courage, skill, nerve, grace, and stupidity.
I'll do you for that.
What?
Come here. What are you going to do, bleed on me? I'm invincible.
You're a loony.
The Black Knight always triumphs.
Roundtable Live, Monday through Friday, 1 a.m. till 4 a.m. Eastern Time. Bring your mind, bring your ideas, bring your voice. King Arthur had nothing on us. Here, Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. All right, thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And now we're going to get back to your host.
Barbara Jean Lindsay, the Cosmic Oracle. If you have questions about your past lives or future plans, need answers from the cosmos about your love life or career, or just want to keep your finger on the pulse of the planet, check out my show, The Cosmic Oracle, here on Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com.
Feel that things were not quite right, that everything was just ever so slightly askew?
Do you have, to paraphrase Morpheus, a splinter in your mind?
If you're interested in hearing the latest information about UFOs, the paranormal,
ancient cultures and structures,
monatomic elements,
longevity,
fantastic discoveries in science,
download it to your brain,
then tune in to us. Hi, I'm Dave.
And I'm Mackie.
And we are Shiny Side Out, Sundays 2 to 4 a.m. Eastern. See you then.
Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. You don't need to expect us. We're already here.
The Secret Kindergarten is here for the young children of the world. the best program on the radio for kids, dealing with the most important topics in the whole universe. Fairy tales, music and movement, numbers, plants, animals, fun, colors, insects. Take care and cast your ears out to catch a story from the world of other young things. Reach out, up, under, and over. Sing a song. Talk about feelings. Just remember the magic word. The magic word is no. Step on into the secret kindergarten. Saturdays, 2 p.m. to 3 p.m. Eastern Time. Right here on Revolution Radio.
Check in every Thursday night for the Crypt Rick and Jonathan Show.
Studio A, 6 to 8 p.m. Eastern Standard Time, right here at the number one listener-supported radio station, Revolution Radio.
Join me at Revolution Radio, Studio B, at 11 a.m. on Saturday for Free Association, when we take a look at philosophy, spirituality, psychology, social issues, and geopolitics. It's every Saturday at 11 a.m. Eastern on Studio B at freedomslips.com.
Thank everybody for listening to Revolution Radio at freedomslips.com, the one place where information never sleeps. Revolution, Revolution Radio!
Alright, let's show them what we got here.
Thanks for listening while we took that short break here at Revolution Radio, freedomslips.com. And yeah, we're going to get back to your host.
Hello, everyone. I'd like to welcome all of you back to Ohio Exopolitics. I'm your host, Mark Snyder, on about an hour late. Sorry about that. Better than nothing, I guess. I'm going to share my screen and share the computer sound and play some clips for the rest of the hour. Okay. Here we go. AI deciding who to kill first in Israel.
In 2021, the commander of Israeli intelligence published a book on designing a special machine that would resolve what he described as a human bottleneck for locating and approving targets in war. A recent investigation by Plus 972 magazine and Local Call reveals that the Israeli army has developed an artificial intelligence-based program known as Lavender, which does exactly that. According to six Israeli intelligence officers with first-hand experience, the Lavender AI machine determined who to kill and was obeyed with military discipline. During the first weeks of the war, the Lavender system designated about 37,000 Palestinians as targets and directed airstrikes on their homes. Despite knowing that the system makes errors about 10% of the time, there was no requirement to check the machine's data. The Israeli army systematically attacked the targeted individuals at night, in their homes, while their whole family was present. An automated system known as Where's Daddy was used to track the targeted individuals and carry out bombings when they entered their families' residences. The obvious result was that thousands of women and children were wiped out by Israeli airstrikes. According to these Israeli intelligence officers, the IDF bombed them in homes as a first option. And on several occasions, entire families were murdered when the actual target was not inside. In one instance, four buildings were destroyed along with everyone inside because a single target was in one of them. When it came to targets marked as low level by the AI Lavender system, cheaper bombs were used, which destroyed entire buildings, killing mostly civilians and entire families. This was done because the IDF did not want to waste expensive bombs on who they deemed as unimportant people. It was decided that for every low-level Hamas operative that Lavender marked, it was permissible to kill up to 15 or 20 civilians. And if the target was a senior Hamas official, more than 100 civilians was acceptable. Most of these AI targets were never tracked before the war. The Lavender software analyzed information collected on the 2.3 million residents of the Gaza Strip through a system of mass surveillance, assessed the likelihood of each person being a militant, and gave a rating from 1 to 100. If the rating was high enough, then they were killed along with their entire family. Lavender flagged individuals who had patterns similar to Hamas, including police, civil defense, relatives, and residents who had similar names and nicknames. This sort of tracking system has existed in the U.S. for years.
What I will be providing you and the fine gentleman of the Secret Service is a list of every threat made about the president since February 3rd and a profile of every threat maker.
And these are like existing targets?
Exhibit A, Oakland resident Justin Pinsky posted on a message board. Romania has a storied history of executing their leaders. Couldn't they do us a solid and take out Bush?
How is this all possible?
Keyword selectors. Attack, take out Bush. So think of it as a Google search, except instead of searching only what people make public, we're also looking at everything they don't. So emails, chats, SMS, whatever.
Yeah, but which people?
The whole kingdom, Snow White.
And while many people claim that Israel controls the U.S., Joe Biden said that Israel serves U.S. interests.
There's no apology to be made. None. It is the best $3 billion investment we make. Whether or not in Israel, the United States of America would have to invent an Israel to protect her interests in the region. The United States would have to go out and invent an Israel.
Reporting for InfoWars, this is Greg Reese. Thank you for watching the latest Greg Reese Report. Be sure to go to reesereport.com to see my latest videos, sign up for my free newsletter, and subscribe for exclusive content. And be sure to support my sponsor at InfoWarsStore.com.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next.
The U.S. government doesn't want you to have this drone. This $99 intelligent drone is disrupting the entire photography.
But here's Donald Trump responding to the news where they're saying, oh, look, we made bird flu in a lab now. It's going to be worse than COVID, so just get ready. We're going to conquer you. Here's Trump responding, clip six.
Left-wing lunatics are trying very hard to bring back COVID lockdowns and mandates with all of their sudden fear-mongering about the new variants that are coming. Gee whiz, you know what else is coming? An election. They want to restart the COVID hysteria so they can justify more lockdowns, more censorship, more illegal drop boxes, more mail-in ballots, and trillions of dollars in payoffs to their political allies heading into the 2024 election. Does that sound familiar? These are bad people. These are sick people we're dealing with. But to every COVID tyrant who wants to take away our freedom, hear these words. We will not comply. So don't even think about it. We will not shut down our schools. We will not accept your lockdowns. We will not abide by your mask mandates. And we will not tolerate your vaccine mandates. They rigged the 2020 election, and now they're trying to do the same thing all over again by rigging the most important election in the history of our country, the 2024 election, even if it means trying to bring back COVID. But they will fail because we will not let it happen.
While other networks lie to you about what's happening now, InfoWars tells you the truth about what's happening next. Visit InfoWars.com/show and share the link today.
U.S. is collaborating. Now, this is from last month. This is from February. Time is flying. I forgot it was April already. So this is from February. U.S. is collaborating with Chinese scientists to make bird flu strains more infectious and deadly as part of $1 million project, despite fears similar tests unleashed COVID. No, that's exactly what happened. So now they're testing with this bird flu. This is from February. And then here's your headline for today. Bird flu pandemic could be 100 times worse than COVID. There it is. Hey, let's make some bird flu in a lab. Hey, let's make bird flu more deadly. And then there was this other story where a lab in Colorado, and the scientists apparently are like running around getting bitten by bats and rats, like, and they run into the lab like, I'm getting bit by a bat. Oh, my gosh. And then they get a disease. It's like, what in the hell is going on? So that only took about 2 months there. Hey, we're going to make some bird flu. Hey, look, bird flu broke out. Oh, it's going to be 100 times worse than COVID. Scientists say bird flu pandemic could be 100 times worse than COVID. The scientists made the virus. 100 times worse than COVID after U.S. and China collaborate on strengthening strains. I mean, can you imagine? It's like they're in a lab, they make the virus comes out of the lab, and then they emerge from the lab and take off their hazmat suits and say, sorry, people, but this virus could be 100 times worse than COVID. What virus? This virus we just made. What? Yeah, we made a virus. It's about 100 times worse than COVID. It's out now. But it seems Donald Trump is ahead of it on this one. Now, if he would have gone with his gut on COVID, we probably would have been a lot better off. But who knows what other threats were being made. But here's Donald Trump responding to the news where they're saying, oh, look, we made bird flu in a lab now. It's going to be worse than COVID. So just get ready. We're going to conquer you. Here's Trump responding, clip 6.
Left-wing lunatics are trying very hard to bring back COVID lockdowns and mandates with all of their sudden fear-mongering about the new variants that are coming. Gee whiz, you know what else is coming? An election. They want to restart the COVID hysteria so they can justify more lockdowns, more censorship, more illegal drop boxes, more mail-in ballots, and trillions of dollars in payoffs to their political allies heading into the 2024 election. Does that sound familiar? These are bad people. These are sick people we're dealing with. But to every COVID tyrant who wants to take away our freedom, hear these words. We will not comply. So don't even think about it. We will not shut down our schools. We will not accept your lockdowns. We will not abide by your mask mandates. And we will not tolerate your vaccine mandates.
One moment.
The solar eclipse on April 8th is becoming a major event. The National Guard is being deployed, and the people are being advised to have 2 weeks of food. and to fill their fuel tanks. This could all be explained due to the fact that tens of thousands of visitors are expected along the path of totality. But many people believe that they could be preparing for possible earthquakes due to the Devil Comet aligning with the April 8th eclipse, and due to the fact that in 1811, a comet also appeared in the skies during a solar eclipse on the same path and was followed by the biggest earthquakes in American history. Known as the New Madrid earthquakes, around 10,000 earthquakes occurred in just 3 months' time, the biggest being measured at 8.8 magnitude. They were the most devastating series of earthquakes in recorded history. But it was a different comet, and while some claim that a solar eclipse can trigger earthquakes, this scenario seems unlikely. This eclipse season is, however, a very rare event. The recent eclipses...
I'm going to take us on to some Billy Myers stuff. So I suppose this verse indicates that Christ was homeless?
I wouldn't necessarily say homeless. Why don't you... Let's read through this one more time and break it down.
Oh, you want to get the... I'd have to go... Hang on a sec. It's upstairs.
My Bible. Oh, your Bible?
Yeah.
Don't they always have an online Bible?
On, they do. They have a Bible Gateway. You can look it up on...
Bible Gateway. I'm on the website. It's my first time here. Give me the passage again.
Matthew 8:20.
Guessing they set it up like this.
Yeah.
Foxes have dens and birds have nests, but the Son of Man has no place to lay his head. I think I don't have full context for what Matthew wrote, but when you consider people at this time or when you go to sleep, the requirement for that is that you need to be a little bit peaceful, right?
Mm-hmm.
So if he was constantly being hunted down or tried or made out to be, you know, whatever sort of evil monstrosity the Pharisees thought he was.
Right.
I think he's just saying that the context of this, that him, Son of Man, has no peace at this moment. Him in his natural environment has no place where he can rest.
I think that's a really good interpretation. Very insightful.
Yeah, I don't know all of Matthew here, and I don't know what would be in the full chapter. But that's just my guess off the rip on this.
Now, Billy has the Talmud of Emmanuel, correct?
Yeah, the Talmud of Emmanuel was found by Billy and his friend Issa Rashid. And Issa Rashid was someone that was also commissioned under the Laren to help with the finding and translation of this of these scrolls that were buried inside a hillside over in the Middle East. And when he had gotten these, his family was being hunted, so they went into hiding, went into what I would say is like a camp of sorts, and that camp was burnt down. And in the midst of that being burnt down and his family being, I don't know, you could put your imagination to it, they destroyed those scrolls. And those scrolls were the last writings from Judas, who was the only one that was well-versed in reading and writing at that time, who redid much of the written story of Emmanuel at that time, who we know as Jesus Christ, to keep it as simple as possible.
So the Talmud now, they had the first version, which was pretty small, and then Billy has his expanded version,
yes,
which is like 3 or 4 inches.
Yes,
it is a good book. Doesn't it have the equivalent of the book of Matthew somewhere in there, probably?
It speaks about Matthew, but a majority of it, I would say, is a better recorded story from less voices. It's only from one single voice,
okay,
Judas and his recording. So it's much, much easier to read. Mm-hmm. And I guess there's less personalities jumping in trying to tell the story all at once. So it's much easier to follow in those respects, and it's more detailed.
The one thing I remember from reading is there are practical explanations for a lot of the miracles, correct? Like walking yeah. on water and things like that.
Okay, so one thing I think we need to clear up here, Mark, is the word miracle.
Mm-hmm.
Nothing in and of itself is a miracle. Now, to people at that time who had limited scientific understanding and weren't of a very significant consciousness development, to them, things that were outside of their normal understanding would be seen as a miracle. But something that is a miracle would fall outside of the laws of creation. Right? It doesn't function like that. Nature does what nature does. And there's nothing that can happen outside of nature, because if that was so, the whole universe would collapse on itself, right? There would be something that wasn't actually accounted for. Now, the miracles, when you say, hey, we can explain those miracles can be explained because they're natural things that occurred but acted as phenomenon to the people who were observers because they did not understand how those things could occur.
Like the one thing I remember is Emmanuel, they thought he was walking on water, but he had like a large plank he was standing on, something to that event.
The old netting boats that were used out there in the Mediterranean, they were quite flat. Mm-hmm. They were used for fishing. And depending on your distance you're away on the water, you get Fatima Morgana, I think is what it's called, Fatima Morgana. And what it does is it gives that illusion. So it almost looks like you would be floating at that point. It'd be difficult to actually see the bottom of that very, very small fishing vessel that he would have been on.
Mm. Interesting.
Mm. There was a gentleman, I'm trying to remember his name, but he wrote a book called The Unknown Life of Jesus Christ.
Mm-hmm.
It was really, really cool. Outside of the context, this gentleman had never read any of the information that was produced by Billy, because it happened much later after this gentleman had, you know, had died and published his work. But his work went to find out what happened to Jesus in his lost years at age 32 onward, or whatever it was, or 16 onward, 32. Yeah, 16 onward. Like, where did he go? And he found his way over to India, and through this guy's travels and his stories, he had realized that there are many recorded incidences in historical record over there from the people in the Hindu Kush of Emmanuel, or who we know as Jesus Christ.
Do you remember the guy's name? Oh, I interviewed him several times, and he's passed away. I'm thinking he was a scientist, but I don't remember what field. But he became very interested in the Talmud of Emmanuel, at least the first one that came out. And he noticed that a lot of the writing in there had similarity to Aramaic. There were certain qualities, and that's why he thought the Meyer material was probably real.
Mm-hmm.
Because of the name.
Yeah. Aramaic's a very, it's an old language, right? It's an old language in that region of the world. And language develops a lot over time. How people speak, how we describe our world, how we describe our thoughts has become, I would say there's more prose in it in some respects,
mm-hmm.
but it's an interesting study of language because people can say they can have an experience through reading something and then describe that experience. So it's almost like you're talking about an experience of an experience. Now, if you go through generation upon generation upon generation, language starts to change then, describing experience or other people's experiences. Now, Aramaic has a very specific structure, like German, like Sanskrit, all those different things. So upon translation of such material, the context or the way of how people used to describe things in Aramaic that were studious enough or consciously evolved enough to read and write, it could very clearly be seen from the Aramaic scrolls into what was translated into text that nature of speaking was quite accurate to how people portrayed and described their world at that time.
Hmm. I'm going to switch gears for just a few moments and cover some news.
Ooh, okay.
It might be kind of fun to get your input.
Yeah,
I don't know if have you seen this large storm near Maine? That's
no.
left 400,000 people without power. 24 inches of snow in 3 days. Winds of 35 mile an hour.
Mm, the April nor'easter hits Maine.
Yeah.
Very interesting. What are your thoughts on this?
I'm just an observer, I guess, at this point. I don't know where I sit on the whole climate change thing. Maybe someday we can talk about that.
Well, let's just give me 5 minutes of it right now. Go for it. We got plenty of time.
Well, I have a lot to cover, but I haven't really studied climate change.
Mm.
The one thing I always think of is carbon dioxide.
Yeah.
Seems like something plants need, right? And we need oxygen. So you probably have more academic.
Yeah, do you want my academic take on this?
Sure.
A very large majority of the oxygen we receive on this planet comes from two areas, okay? Number one is the boreal forest. The boreal forest is much of the vegetative area that circumcovers the globe, I would say, in longitudinal area. Not of Brazil. Of
Canada, Siberia.
Yeah, all that. So it's a very thick zone, and you can see it if you look at the Earth. Mm-hmm. And then the other area, which a majority of our oxygen comes from, is the ocean, right? You get it from scrubbing algaes and other, aquatic life that is actually generating a lot of the material that comes back up into the atmosphere. Now, you say carbon dioxide is one of the big things that affects the Earth. Well, there's a couple of different elements that are actually occurring. So I would say about 50, 60 years ago would be about a time when 50% of what was happening in the change of our planet in terms of its overall temperature rise on average was 50% done a function of cosmic events and then 50% a function of the Industrial Revolution since the 1800s up to where we are today.
Mm-hmm.
And that's also that's a secondary function of the size of the population that we have. Now, as those two elements have grown, our population has grown even further, which means we've exacerbated that average temperature for ourselves. And in doing so, as the amount of population on this planet has increased, so does the resource demand per human being and the waste that is generated. So essentially, you need an energy input that has to go into a human being, and then that output is a generation of waste. It's a natural thing that occurs. Now, the Earth and all of its bioavailable systems does a relatively good job with dealing with our waste. But when our waste gets so significant and our resource demand becomes higher than which the Earth can repeat on itself, you start to have negative effects where the Earth realizes that there's an organism on its crust itself that it needs to equalize the energy of what we are taking, right? So through the natural law of elimination, the Earth is going to kick back on us. And you find that through the rise in the average temperature. You find that through the changes of where we are, respectively, in our solar center to the rest of the Milky Way, where the planet has transitioned, so we actually have more cosmic radiation hitting the Earth. And if you couple that with what we're doing in terms of experiments on our own weather systems, generating more of this inorganic waste that is binding with our clean air, and then pair that again with nuclear testing, which is offsetting the internal core of the Earth, and with that also upsets our electromagnetic radiations that come through the Van Allen belts, protecting us from specific solar radiations, we are throwing the Earth out of its natural rhythms. And from that, you see that there's a human exacerbation. And as we exacerbate these things, we have higher severities of storms that we actually have to deal with, or other what we'd say natural events. They're natural events that just happen with a greater magnitude.
So we should reduce the number of people and increase the number of trees. Would that help?
Yeah, I mean, the trees will apprentice themselves. As the amount of people decrease through people choosing to have less children less often, mm-hmm. You don't want to go out there and just start eradicating people. That's not right. That's genocidal, right? You don't want to do that. What you want to do is you want people to be educated on the fact that when one new human being is added to this planet, there's a massive resource draw. And that resource draw of adding one more person draws those resources from others in an already very strained, inextricably linked ecosystem of people and planet. So we need to be more intelligent about reducing the frequency at which human beings are having more human beings. And then also those human beings need to be better educated on the impact of their choices, which is something we're not doing very well right now.
And it also depends on the level of advancement of the society, correct? Because a very primitive village won't produce as much let's call it damage to the environment as a large city that's, you know, has advanced technologies and things like that.
No, that's not necessarily true. So in India, a majority of the energy that the people in India use is biomass that they're burning. So it's actually cow dung. And the release of cow dung has a lot of methane and CO2, which they burn to cook their food and keep their homes warm. And there's over a billion people just in India alone. And there's other natural biomass that other people are using, say, in the mountainous or farming regions of China outside of the metropolises, which they also use. And those things also have a great impact. But then you find that our unchecked need for physical goods and services to run within this world, compounded by a structure of debt in a poorly designed financial system, causes us to create more, buy more, demand more, use more, and strip the earth of its natural materials and tell us that we just need to continue to generate more. It's a repetition of this idea of what is seeming progress, but the progress is actually more damaging to us.
So sometimes even the primitive society does a lot of damage.
Of course it does. We're primitive right now, but then there's other groups that, you know, are just as primitive. But I think if you're talking about the clear context of someone that lives very close in line with nature, you can find those people, right? And you can find them in primitive or you can find them in very developed areas. Mm. But a vast majority of people are just trying to find the most economically feasible things for themselves, but it's not necessarily what's in the best interest of them, their health, their community, or the planet in doing so. Just because I bought something from China and it was cheap doesn't mean that it's, you know, overall going to be a good choice for me in my life, because there's many different elements that are baked into it, and that thing may not last very long, and I should have paid more, and I should have been more conscious about what I was doing. But we are conditioned into a society of not being that conscious about these decisions we're making, Mark.
It was interesting that you talked about India burning dung.
Mm-hmm.
I remember a guy I worked with once. I was kind of reading about that, and he says, yeah, it makes the air pollution really bad, and I forget what city. He told me one of the cities is particularly bad.
Yeah.
And that's like a seasonal thing they do, right?
It is a seasonal thing they do, and, I mean, other people still burn coal to heat their homes. Like, that is not, one, what you want to be breathing, two, putting into the atmosphere, and it's not the most efficient thing in the world to keep you warm, but that's all they have at that respect.
Coal has the little particles. Don't they?
Coal's got a lot in it.
Yeah, no, you breathe that in and it damages you, correct?
Yes, yes. So any sort of an aerosol, do you know what an aerosol is?
Sure.
Yeah, an aerosol is just it's a particle. It's a physical particle that floats around. And your lungs it's a mesh. It's a meshy membrane, and it directly connects with your bloodstream. So when you're huffing in things that are organic or inorganic or in an organic sense, not good for you, your lungs take it and filter that through first. And if you're constantly over the stove, cooking over these things, breathing it in, it's damaging you at very small cellular levels. But over the course of many, many years, that's a lot for the body to deal with. That's a big toll. And now you have so many people who have been like that, generating a health toll over so long, then they need to be cared for and end-of-life care. So now you have a massive economic drain and pressure on a healthcare system because of all these different life habits people have had up to that point, which need to be cared for then at the end of life.
You know, I remember when I lived in Cincinnati that there's a lot of air pollution there, and some of that's from burning coal. And there are like these particulates that are particularly bad for you. And I just remember the difference when I left there and came up here. Part of it was, you know, being able to breathe a little better.
Yeah. You got to, let's see what's in it. Yeah, ammonia, you don't want to be huffing that. Sulfur dioxide, you absolutely do not want that in your lungs. And nitrogen oxides. Anything that's really an oxide is something that is going to be extremely damaging to organic material in those respects. Like, you don't want your water that you drink heavily oxygenated, right? That's not really the...
Oh, really?
Yeah, water's, oxygen is, how do I explain this chemically and simply? It's like super active, right?
Mm-hmm.
And
right.
It's really good at burning through things. And too much of that oxygen, it actually isn't best for the water itself. It destroys the structure of that water and how you bind things to it. Rust, right? What are things doing? They're oxidizing. So oxidation creates that degradation of hard metals, or if you're plowing fields with iron objects, it destroys things at cellular levels. It's difficult to recover from that. And a lot of it is water-based materials, water-based organisms, or anything of the sort. When you deal with these oxides come in and they oxidize things, right? Something is getting replaced at a chemical level, but degrading the physicality of whatever that thing might be.
So I remember that on the ancient Earth, our atmosphere had more oxygen, and the trees grew much bigger, and the animals grew much bigger as well, correct?
Yeah, it's not bad to have more oxygen. I'm not saying that's a bad thing. I'm talking about oxides.
Oxides.
Yeah, oxide. So, and again, I'm not a chemist by trade, but I'm just talking about when things are oxide heavy, it's typically not good. And if you want an easy barometer to tell about the quality of air somewhere, the more cobalt the sky is, the better quality of the atmosphere you're breathing. And you typically find deep cobalt skies further in the north around Alaska, right, or Tierra del Fuego, or you find it in places like New Mexico where it's a very rich blue. Places of very low pollution, low human activity, and very untouched natural cycles.
Also, rust on metal you were talking about. And I remember that our thinking actually affects the rust on the metal.
Yeah, that's correct.
That's amazing, actually.
Well, let me see if I can make this jump for you here. Okay.
Well, you know,
I think you'll appreciate this.
One interesting thing in our discussions, I always come up with a plan, and we go about two questions into, we take about a 15-minute.
Yeah, that's what happens. You've got to be careful, Mark.
I always got questions, and I should just listen and just be quiet. Go ahead.
All right, so here's my point. So we've gone over this in previous episodes, that your thoughts affect the physical world, okay?
Yeah.
Now, if you think about rust, and I talked to you about oxidation and rust itself. I said that when you have that much amount of oxidative stress, essentially, there's so much of this harsh chemical process going on. It's like moving back and forth. It's quite chaotic. If we in our world have lots of these chaotic thoughts, we are also affecting physical objects, right? Our atmosphere, we are affecting things which are metal. And so we are exacerbating the speed at which things are degrading because of the way we think. So we're emitting a chaotic signature that matches up with things that are oxidizing, and then they have a compounded resonance causing those things to just erode at a more accelerated rate.
Yeah, hopefully we'll get to that. I found this really interesting stuff in the Might of Thoughts that talks about the fact that we are actually creating our surroundings from our thoughts. Now, depending on how you interpret that and interpret what he says, you could probably interpret it different ways, but it's pretty amazing stuff. But this was a slight tangent. I was trying to get through some more news, but we took a little bit of a half.
Well, you can do some more news. I mean, this is fine.
Well, this one you'll find interesting because it's so absurd. On another note, a cruise turned into a nightmare for people aboard the Royal Caribbean's Liberty of the Seas when a young man jumped overboard shortly after 4 a.m. Thursday.
Mm-hmm.
The ship that this drunk person jumped off of was one of those huge cruise ships. And I believe that if the people are, for example, if we're focused intensely on our higher evolution, we probably won't be jumping off cruise ships at 4 a.m. in the morning.
That's a pretty good jump. Did he die or is he alive?
I'm pretty sure he's dead. Yeah, sad story, but, talking about your thinking, let's talk about winning numbers for estimating. Oh, by the way, there is a Powerball now that's worth over $1 billion. I don't really follow this stuff either, but I just found this interesting.
Uh-huh.
And I think these Powerballs are kind of destructive. We ought to be striving and working for goals instead of trying to win the lottery and all this crazy stuff. What do you think about what this does to people's motivations?
Oh, man. Do you know what happens when people make a lot of money really fast?
They probably blow it, really. Uh-huh.
They lose it really quick. Now, energy, money is like energy. Mm-hmm. And unless you know how to deal with copious amounts of energy, which has to be learned, you're just going to lose it. It's going to disappear on you. It's no good. You don't understand how to deal with it. Mark, if I give you the keys to a nuclear power plant, what would you do? You wouldn't know what to do with it. I give you the keys to a UFO, which has the ability to move faster than the speed of light. You wouldn't know how to operate it. You have to be taught. You have to learn these things over time.
Yeah.
And many people feel that, in a lot of respects, they would like to play the lottery because they want to stop working. They want to retire from life, but they don't realize that life is work. You cannot escape these things. You won't learn anything from it. You learn how you can spend money, and you can spend it really fast. But I don't know. Yeah, play the Powerball. Go ahead. I'd rather get lucky under my own hard labors rather than the government determining something mathematically that I'm probably not even going to hit on.
Exactly.
Yeah.
Bird flu pandemic. They're starting to talk about that again. That could be a real thing, right? I mean, I think.
I don't know.
Okay.
I don't know. $1 million is not a lot to create a biological weapon. I mean, just to create a drug here in the United States costs you like $1 billion at a minimum just to get it through some clinical trials.
Hmm.
Yeah, so I don't know. I don't have a clue. I got, 14, 15 chickens now? They're all fine. So,
yeah, good.
I don't know. If one of them drops dead on me just out of like the air and I'm like, that doesn't look right, then I will let you know.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Have you been following any of the airline problems they're having?
You think about Boeing? So I learn my news from other people. I don't like reading the news. I have no interest in it.
One of the pilots said the brakes seems less effective.
Good.
So he slid off the taxiway. We've had a lot of problems with doors falling off and landing gear falling off and engines catching on fire. It's a very strange time of – it almost seems like our society's kind of falling apart. And let me bring this up just to show the point.
It was never together, Mark.
Well, I obviously – it really wasn't. Congress, I couldn't believe this when I saw it. Congress has approved $54 billion for the Ukraine war.
Idiots.
Total idiots. I mean, they're totally. Joe Biden, he asked for another $38 billion on top of the $54.
Mm-hmm. He can't even figure out what his next sentence is. Why is he asking for money? Doesn't matter. He doesn't run the government. The CIA does.
I think the CIA.
Oh, no, that's a definite. Mm-hmm. Do you know what? There's only one power in this world, Mark, and it's knowledge.
Mm-hmm.
And there's only one group that knows more than anybody else just because they confiscate knowledge and they hold it so silent, so close to their chest. That's the CIA.
CIA.
Yeah. Unlimited funding, unlimited knowledge, access to any corner of the internet completely unrestricted. Yeah, it's them.
Did you hear about the and I may have this later on in the show, I don't remember, but the there was a group, you know, we've got Israel and Gaza over there and they're fighting and the aid workers are driving their vehicles in there.
Mm-hmm.
Three vehicles and the IDF blew them up from the air.
I'm going to share something. It's war.
It is.
Okay?
It is.
You are in the business of killing people in war. So why does it make a difference to them, whoever this person is who's in the business of doing war, if you're an aid worker or not? They don't give a shit. They don't like it at all. If anything, you're just in the battlefield, in their context. To them, they probably have insanely rationalized some sort of ratio between civilian casualty and who they pin as enemy casualty. I don't know this. I'm speculating. But the way I see it is, like, for us, we're like, oh, that what they're doing is immoral. They're already killing other people. What would stop them from killing an aid worker? To me, it does not shock me.
I follow your thinking. And it's, logical. It's logical.
Yeah. War is war. It's never good. Human beings killing each other, human beings, does absolutely no service to this planet. Does nothing to our evolution collectively. It is unknowing, unjust, unruly, animalistic, barbaric, hideous, spineless, everything about it. It's disgusting at its core.
It is. It's hard to believe we're spending that much money. How can
No, it's not. Because a portion of those funds go to specific projects. It's not just them over there. It's just money to exacerbate open wounds. That's all they want to do. When you put money into these things, people become highly polarized on it. When people lose their jobs, they become polarized. When people's bank accounts get low. And when you find out tax dollars are going towards something, now you have people's attention. You can direct people emotionally because you're using money.
But, you know, $54 billion, that's unbelievable.
Yeah, I mean, I guess in some respects, but I don't know if it goes over one chunk or what they're saying is we'll commission over the next X amount of years this amount of dollars per year towards the military-industrial complex to create new weapons, do these things, submit
bank
aid, all this other
low.
Shit that goes with it.
When
you find out tax dollars are going to – I haven't read it.
People
you know, I have motion looked over it, but
money.
I'm sure it has those things in place, so it's probably broken
but,
down.
You know,
so they have an expectation
dollars.
About
That's
how long they want this conflict to last. And you could see it right there probably if you read it.
Yeah. You're right. It could be over years. It's hard.
Yeah. Nobody. They don't want to shut down their business. Murder for them is good business. So they want to continue to do it. Instability is good business. That's what they want.
Okay. I'm going to jump to the book, The Way to Live, on page 116.
Oh, you want to jump to something positive. Yay.
Yay.
Yay, Mark. Yay. Yeah.
Through this religious, sectarian, irrational teaching, every believer... creational, natural, innate striving for that which is higher and for the highest possible, absolutely full development is throttled and even eliminated. So if you get involved in certain religions, they are going to stifle your strive, your natural urge to strive.
And why do you think that, Mark?
Tell me. I think maybe they are... their philosophies go against creation, and they teach certain things that interrupt the natural urge to strive. Now, I could guess at a few doctrines that maybe.
Yeah, go ahead. Give me one. Yeah, rip it. Go for it.
Well, yeah, I think a lot of, you know, of our religions. They somehow take away the tendency that we normally have to be independent, to think on our own, to take responsibility, and to really, really work. And I think sometimes religion interrupts this natural thought process. And I think that's what Billy's saying.
You know, I see religion like artificial intelligence. I can have a question, put it into a prompt. This thing goes through, reads the Bible of the internet, spits me out a passage and tells me to live like that. I don't even have to think about it. I'd be like, oh, this thing is combed through all human knowledge and understanding. It's told me exactly how I need to live. Guess what?
Could be
a
wrong.
Load of crap.
Load of crap. Could be wrong. Yeah.
How can this thing possibly know the context to a hand? I am so unique. So is every other 9.4, 9.5, 10 billion people that are on this planet. Every single one has its own unique personality, its own idiosyncrasies, its own thought patterns that are completely unique in signature. You cannot, in any way, shape, or form, have evolution happen from the outside. And religion is something that says there is something greater than you, determining for you how you should live, giving you rules. It does not allow you to construct for yourself what is best for you. What is the best alignment of self? How do you think about your relationship with what allows you to exist? They tell you to believe in structures. Do not challenge them. If this works for everybody else, it must work for you. Well, that's fundamentally not true. It doesn't work at all, right? You know, if you have people that are good at murdering, that doesn't mean it's good for me. You can't just assume that, you know, generically across the board and say, hey, blanket statement. But that's what religion does. And religion, on top of that, always forces you to think about your sins, the past. And everything you got to do is about the sins. It's not about correcting your way of thinking to evolve to go forward, but it is a constant reminder of history for you. It is not actually talking about you and your rich development and your own self-awareness, your own self-responsibility going forward. It's like, no, you need to fix yourself for some higher being. And if you don't do so, you're going to have a bad life in the future. So you're saying my past, and I have no determination if this thing, which I don't even know and I've never seen, is going to decide for me that my future is going to be best if I can atone for these things? Atone to what? For karma? For sins? To a priest? Like, what are these things? Do I got to pray to a totem so that this thing can fix me? No. Fixing happens from the inside out. But religion wants you to think that the outside in is the only way to live. And it doesn't want you to be neutral, positive, and push yourself forward by your own bootstraps. No, you have to ask. You need to get permission. You can't come through the pearly gates because you're a bad person. You're going to go to hell because of the shit you did. Or the next life you live, you're going to come back as a bug. How dumb is that?
Page 118, way to live.
You get me so amped up, Mark.
Teaching in life. I need suffering nor grief. And no life is subject to karmic conditions, which is what you said, right? So karma is just the law of cause and effect. And this is, Billy has a page on karma. Karma signifies nothing less than the law of causality, which is the natural created law of cause and effect. The material realm, as well as the immaterial or spiritual and fine material realm, are included in this law. Just cause and effect.
Just pure cause and effect. Guess what happens when my fleshy body goes away and dies? I'm no longer in the material chain of cause and effect. It's gone. It's completely gone. That personality of Alexander McKeag is completely gone. Abolished. Never to come back. But what does stay forward are the energy signatures of truth, knowledge, wisdom, peace, love. Those things carry forward. Those things are timeless. They're timeless because they're truthful. And so in the non-material realm, those good values can be brought forward. Nothing negative is brought forward. Things that are karmic, in a sense, those don't carry themselves forward. The spirit doesn't care about that. That stuff's crap. That was an error. You're not bringing the errors forward. It's only bringing all the good things.
The only thing that I think might happen sometimes, and I don't know if you've read about this or not, but I know that, and I forget that there's a college that has a focus on reincarnation. I can't remember the name of it. I can't even remember the guy's name that did these studies. But what they found out was, like, for instance, a person has past life memories that are very traumatic, and they have a memory of being stabbed in the back. And sometimes there will be like a birthmark that, you know, like a from a stab wound. There, I've seen things like that that seem to come over. It doesn't really matter that much. It's not that big of a deal. I wish I could remember the name of that.
I know what you're talking about. So this gentleman, well, one of the people did a study outside of reverse hypnosis. They did a study on children. I think the book is called, like, Many Lives, Many Faces or something like that.
Yeah.
And the context here is that these children were having recollections of events of historical people when the kids have no context to the history. They were too young to understand it, to learn it, but they're sharing with their parents, and the parents brought them in. They're like, analyze my kid. There's something wrong with him. What they found is that beyond a scientific doubt, there was enough evidence to say that there must be some form of reincarnation that is occurring. They are tapping into past cosmic storage bank memories that are stored somewhere but they have the ability to access them.
Right.
Yeah, very cool stuff.
Definitely.
Very, very cool stuff.
I need to get my ducks in a row, and I didn't know I would get into reincarnation today.
Everything grows, comes back, but nature is in a constant state of adaptation and movement. So because of that, because of the laws of adaptation, because of the laws of movement, cause and effect, it cannot have two of the exact same thing. Can't do it. Wouldn't work. It needs to have something at some sort of core level to be different. And when things are born, something new has to be born every single time. And if it kept recreating the same exact personality, it'd be very difficult for it to learn because it doesn't get variability in its context. It's almost like training a computer algorithm in some senses. You need massive amounts of variability. Then you can largely test it, assimilate that information, and then bring it back to retune your model, right?
AI.
Reaches of space and time, across the dimensions, through the elements, and in harmony with the colors of the universe. Through her mastery of abstract stream of consciousness malapropisms, she weaves a web of comic, satiric, cosmic conversation. Her subjects can range from Norman, the goose next door, to astrology and earth changes, and into the deep recesses of the soul matrix. She holds a wealth of knowledge on herbs, plants, and astrology. Join Mona and her guests on Adventures of a Feral Hippie as she touches the earthly radio waves 5 days a week at 2 p.m. Monday to Friday.